This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. 90 years ago, this was the first Christmas of the First World War. But that day, an extraordinary truce sprang up between the trenches on the Western Front. Frank Johnson was a British soldier there. He recalled the event for the BBC many years later.
We stuck a board up, Merry Christmas. They also stuck one up, Merry Christmas. So we were saying, well, I don't think they'll fire today. No, I don't think they will. Then lo and behold, here was a German coming down the river bank with his hands up above. One of our chaps threw his equipment off. He went out to meet him. Well, they shook hands. Then we all got out. Company commander come rushing in. He was going to shoot any man that went over. Some voice from the next bay said he was too damn late. He didn't know which was, so said it. So we all had to get out. Well, we mucked in all day, talking one thing and another. One of the Germans said to me, and in excellent English too, well, he said, I don't know, he said. How long do you think this damn war's going to last? I'm fed up to the neck. Well, he said, you were not the only one fed up. I said, we're up to our necks in water and mud. He said, we're the same.
Joining us now is Stanley Weintraub, the author of Silent Night, the story of the World War I Christmas truce. He's with us from his home in Newark, Delaware. And Mr. Weintraub, thanks very much for being with us.
You're welcome. Glad to be with you.
As I understand from history, this in different parts of the front, this truce began on Christmas Eve.
It began spontaneously on Christmas Eve, but I think some troops were expecting it because the stalemate in the mud had occurred on the grounds at Flanders after 4 months of a war that would last 4 years. And the trenches were only about 60 yards apart, that is, enemy to enemy. They shouted to each other, or they catcalled at each other. In other words, they already had some kind of relations going. And then something happened that I guess you have to call the law of unanticipated consequences, because the stalemate was existing, and troop morale was very low. The British and the Germans both sent Christmas presents, Christmas boxes, to the troops on the front lines. They contained tobacco or candy or something else small, because these were rather small boxes, wooden ones on the German side and tin ones on the British side. So there was something to barter. At the same time, the Germans, having a land route from home to the trenches, sent in traditional Christmas trees, little tabletop trees by the thousands, to the trenches. The trees already fitted with candles clamped to them. And the Germans took their chances on putting up their little trees on the parapets, but they did anyway, in the mud and in the rain and in the when it froze and the snow. They put them up. They were shot at a bit, but they persisted, and they began singing. This was just after dark on Christmas Eve. And when they sang Silent Night, it was obviously familiar to the other side.
Yeah, the a lot of the tunes are the same. I assume they are also singing songs in Latin, which both sides could sing.
Both sides would know the songs in Latin. There was also, from the French side, O Holy Night, sung in French, which the Germans knew too. And one side got very curious about what the other side was doing. The British had no trees. This was a German tradition, basically, the tabletop tree. And the British began to crawl out of their trenches into no man's land in the darkness to see better and to hear better. And before long, this crossing of the waterlogged trenches and the barbed wire entanglements caused an informal truce.
How did the officers deal with this? Did they regard this as a welcome break or as a mutiny?
It depended on the level of the officer. The lieutenants and the captains, even some majors, went along with it because there was nothing they could do. You can't very well stop a mass movement. And before long, it was a mass movement. The generals, when they heard about it back in the rear areas, were indignant, but at the start they couldn't do anything about it either. And as I said, the governments on both sides had made this possible. A few trees were shot at. The British became more curious than belligerent. And as they gathered in the darkness on Christmas Eve, they realized that no man's land was full of bodies.
This is just after, or shortly after, the unfortunately, the first Battle of Ypres.
Oh, this was quite long after it now, because there had been stalemate for nearly a month. And that's how the troops managed to get close together. They were accessible to each other, at least by sound, if not by sight. And soon in the darkness, they began meeting each other and wondering how they could get together further, because the bodies were in the way. And some of the soldiers said, why don't we get together at dawn and bury the bodies, and then we'll have a place where we can fraternize. And they did that in many places. It was actually a very moving event. As chaplains from both sides came out, they formally buried the bodies. And as you could imagine, going through that kind of ceremony in various places along the line meant that there was a mood that was very different than one of we hate each other.
Mm-hmm.
Demonizing the enemy wasn't easy under those circumstances. They discovered who they were.
As Frank Johnson described in that clip of tape, people mucked in all day. In other places, there were soccer games sort of erupted, and there was
the soccer games could happen because they cleared the no man's land of bodies. And although playing football, as they called it, in no man's land on Christmas Day seems almost impossible, seems like a myth. When I researched my book Silent Night, I discovered that there were actually references in the war diaries, that is, in the daily reports, to the scores, quite literally to the scores. According to the war diary of the 133rd Saxon Regiment, Tommy and Fritz, as they put it, kicked about a real football supplied by a Scot. This developed into a regulation football match with caps laid out as goals. The frozen ground was no great matter. That's a quote from a German company report. And it ended the game. The game ended 3-2 for Fritz. In other words, they gave the scores.
There have been many truces in war times for people to clear the bodies from the field. There have been plenty of conflicts where both sides were culturally similar. We can look at the American Civil War, no further than that, where people yelled across each other between the lines all the time and even swam across rivers to do a little barter.
But there was never a case where a holiday was involved. This was the only Christmas in the history of warfare in which there was a truce. And the truce lasted until the generals felt that if they let this continue, then the politics of the streets, in effect, would take over and the war would end. And they couldn't let the war end without trying to win it. And so they had to find some way to do something about it other than to issue orders that weren't going to be obeyed. And what they finally decided to do was rotate the troops out of the line. That is, to move the troops that had fraternized and got to know each other and move them back and move in troops who had been indoctrinated to demonize the enemy. So gradually, the troops on the line on both sides turned out to be other troops than the ones that had fraternized.
How long did all of this last?
Some of it lasted until New Year's Day. It depended on where one was on the front lines. And if they got friendly enough, officers would come out when they discovered that there was no way to keep the truce going. A German officer, for example, said, we're going to fire in the air, and that will warn you that you'll have to take cover. But we are under orders that we'll be court-martialed if we don't go back to fighting.
And we've been talking mostly about British and Germans, but French, Belgian troops were also involved.
The French were involved, too. In fact, one of the stars of the French opera actually went out and sang O Holy Night across the trenches to the Germans. But because of censorship, the French wouldn't permit any knowledge of that to be given out at the time. And we only know later from the company reports and the regimental reports what was actually going on.
And after all this time, a new documentary in French has been made about this Christmas truce, a new book out in German for the first time.
There is a book in German now on the subject that uses pretty much the same material that I used. And I gave some help to the fellow in Germany who did his book. But the Germans were not surprised by it. The Germans, initiated it. Hmm. The question, though, was whether it would ever happen again. And in 1915, two British soldiers tried to start it again, and they could not. They were court-martialed, and they were only admonished. That was the biggest penalty that could be given out. And one of them later rose to be a brigadier general, so obviously he wasn't very much affected by this. But there's a song that your listeners may know called Christmas in the Trenches by John McCutcheon, in which he talks about this incident of the two soldiers being court-martialed. But he places it in 1914 rather than in the abortive attempt of 1915 and claims that the soldiers were sentenced to death, but it was commuted by the king, by King George V. Mm-hmm. That never happened. But one line in it is really very significant. Private Tolliver, who sings the song, says, "We learned that on both sides of the rifle, we're the same."
Stanley Weintraub, thank you so much. Stanley Weintraub is the author of Silent Night, the story of the World War I Christmas truce, and he joined us by phone from his home in Newark, Delaware. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.